to a government agency or even to individuals within the FBI. Another example is a theory about the Secret Service supposedly being involved in the assassination unwittingly, accidentally. Some claim that one of the Secret Service guards in the follow-up car accidentally discharged his weapon after the first gunfire was heard, and that it was that bullet that pierced President Kennedy's skull and killed him. The assumption here is that no one saw it, or that those who did have kept quiet all these years to protect the Secret Service agent who is now deceased. It is far-fetched. It is extremely far-fetched. Any day now, given the number of theories about President Kennedy's assassination, I almost expect to see a headline, UFO killed Kennedy. The History Channel, given their predisposition toward ancient aliens, may even make it a feature story. There are certainly some witnesses there and many researchers who believe that at least one shot came from the so-called grassy knoll and behind the little picket fence, as you can see here in the grassy knoll area. There's one photograph that may or may not show a policeman, so-called badge man, behind this particular picket fence. There's a puff of smoke. It may or may not be a puff of smoke, but it could be a puff of smoke. It could also be shadows from the sun onto the leaves of the tree. It's very difficult to tell because this is a Polaroid photo taken by Mary Moorman, and it's awfully difficult to make out very much. It is true that the people in Dealey Plaza, many of them ran up the grassy knoll. They were convinced that one or more of the shots came from the grassy knoll, while others thought it came from the school book depository building. It's difficult to know. It's difficult to say. And there were so many people with so many differing opinions and strong beliefs about the matter that it became difficult for anyone to sort out the truth. Conspiracy theorists across the political spectrum and around the world saw evidence of their enemy's handiwork in Dallas. The KGB quickly concluded that Kennedy had been killed, quote, by a circle of reactionary monopolists in league with pro-fascist groups, unquote. They thought these people who killed President Kennedy were doing so because the president supported civil rights and peace with Russia and higher taxes on oil profits. Khrushchev himself refused to believe, quote, that the U.S. security services were so inept as to have allowed a madman to kill the president, unquote. And he thought the Dallas police must have been involved in the murder. Fidel Castro held similar views. He implicated American ultra-reactionaries, whom the Cuban media described as power brokers upset over Kennedy's weak handling of Cuba. Similar themes rippled across the communist world. Communist propaganda organs in East Europe suggested that the rightists, in their impotence to reverse President Kennedy's liberal policies, had resorted to political terror to gain their ends, as one put it. A communist newspaper in Hanoi blamed U.S. financiers for the shooting. People living in other parts of the world put their own spin on November 22nd. Many sub-Saharan Africans thought that white racists had murdered Kennedy because of civil rights. Middle Eastern commentators viewed the JFK assassination as part of a Zionist plot. One Cairo newspaper noted that Oswald's killer was one Jack Ruberstein, a Jew, of course. He didn't quite get the name right. Right-wingers in nationalist China and also Latin America smelled a communist conspiracy, as did Herbert Philbrick, a rabid anti-communist and FBI counterspy who later expounded his theories in a manuscript entitled The Strange Death of President Kennedy. In a matter of hours, JFK's assassination had become a reflection of each individual's ideology. People saw what they wanted to see in this Rorschach test, and they created narratives that reflected their personal prejudices and predilections. The rather odd legacy of abundant conspiracy theories concerning the assassination of JFK endures to this day. It shows no sign of abating, especially when the U.S. government continues to shield thousands of assassination-related documents from public inspection. Having said all this, though, it's important to stress one thing. You need proof. You need hard evidence to convict anyone of any crime, much less a terrible crime like the assassination of the President of the United States. It's one thing to believe that there's a possibility that a group or an individual participated in the assassination. All presidents have loads of enemies, and no doubt many would be happy were they removed from office. But having motive and having means and having opportunity does not mean that that individual or group actually participated in the assassination of President Kennedy. You have to have proof that would stand up in a courtroom. And most of the theories that are proposed about President Kennedy's assassination do not meet that simple but vital test.
I'm talking with Jerry Pippin about his show that's coming up this week, a special that he's doing where he comments on Bob Schieffer and some of his interviews on Face the Nation, and also on Dr. Larry Sabato, in which he has various events planned in Dallas. His book is A Kennedy Half Century. It's 600 pages. He talks about the various conspiracy theories, including the Cuban part of it, the Soviet part. But he starts off with LBJ. President Kennedy's secretary, Evelyn Lincoln, made a list of possible characters that could be implicated in this, and Lyndon was at the top. And she also said, talking to President Kennedy, that he was going to put Lyndon off the ticket and bring in the governor from the Carolinas, Terry Stanford, who was a progressive type, but from the South, and that was would be part of the reason for doing this. However, though, other people, including Jackie Kennedy, said no, the president was going to keep Lyndon. In fact, Jackie Kennedy liked Lyndon. So there was a different of opinion there. And from other people, from what at least we were able to surmise, the reason for keeping Lyndon was very simple. It was called TEXAS, Texas. Jerry Pippin, what are your ideas?
I think you need to consider Mrs. Lincoln and where she's coming from. She was deeply involved in the Kennedy clan. And as we know, Bobby and even Ted, to a certain extent, had some animosity toward Lyndon Johnson. And there was really not much that Lyndon Johnson could do to change the perception that he was a sweetener dealer from Texas who would stop at nothing, including murder, to get rid of his brother and become president. Now, Larry Sabato lays out the reasons why this theory, this hypothesis, falls apart, and he makes real good sense. So I urge people to listen to that show later in the week. It'll be available at jerrypippin.com plus various other places.
And also, you have other shows that have been done in the past with various people that have various takes on this, unique perspectives over the years. This is 50 years. But what has happened, you talk about Face the Nation, Bob Schieffer, and also old man Jim Lehrer, and their perspective on this. I get the feeling that the perspective that's brought out, and of course having Larry Sabato as a ringmaster of this and his crystal ball, that's where things have went to. We have a similar model we call ours the Ouija board. But anyway, between Ouija boards, crystal balls, flying saucers, and you name it, here, what is basically happening is, and we look at the polling, and so does Sabato, the 61% figure you gave was correct, that's today, believe that somebody else was involved in this. So basically what they're trying to do is put a cap on 50 years and come out with the sort of magic bullet theory. Now, that was a theory of the prosecutor from Philadelphia, the Kansan. He had that, and the reason he had it was to solidify everything and explain away, because everybody knew at the time you could not shoot a bolt action. It was an Italian rifle. And fire as many bullets, it would have been utterly impossible. So the only way they could explain it
all,
was...
All Inspector deserves a fiction award for the Magic Bullet Award.
Well, he admitted that. But the whole idea was to have a general theory to explain how the bullet would have entered Kennedy, went through his back, bounced, and then hit Connally, and then the damage that it did to Connally. Because they couldn't have more than one bullet, or the whole thing would have been out the door. So they had a magic bullet. And that theory has went on and on, and Sabato talks about it in his course. I'd advise people to take the course. I think they have till like 6th of December to finish it up and to get credit for the thing. But nonetheless, with Dr. Sabato's work, and his work is very important because he has written what CBS and the others have proclaimed, the book. And we can only have one the book. We can't have 5 or 10 the books. So Sabato has the book, the authoritative book, to wrap all of this up. Now, that is kind of, you know, has fallen upon him to be the wrapper-up of it, because obviously they couldn't use Sheep or Lara. Let me just give Jerry briefly here. He'll be in Dallas, Texas. You can RSVP, and I'll put this on our tonight's show. There'll be a panel discussion. That's on Wednesday, the 20th, at the Hyatt Regency Dallas. That's 300 Reunion Boulevard, Dallas, Texas. That'll be 6:30 to 8:30. It's open to the public. There'll be some panelists, Jim Bowles, Sid Davis, Wesley Frazier. He was one. And incidentally, we haven't talked enough about this. I'll let you talk in a minute. Mary Moreland, you remember her. Mary Moreland Kerpmer, and the Dr. Robert McClellan. It will be there. And then they'll have a second. They'll be viewing the 50th. It's a movie. And luncheonette at the Mongolian Hotel. That is 1401 Commerce Street in Dallas, Texas. That'll be from 11:30 to 2:30 on the day, the 22nd. And both events are free. And, of course, Dr. Sabato will be there signing his books. The County Hab Center, you can purchase those. And you have to send this to Glenn Crossman. He is at 434-243-3540. Again, that's 434-243-3540. And we'll put that information down there. So, Jerry, your comments.
Well, you know, far be it from me to brag on Professor Sabato, but he did a good job in detail covering almost all the theories fairly objectively, don't you think?
Well, I think where Professor Sabato starts out here, he was from Virginia, born in Virginia.
Yeah, we talked about him.
He was a Catholic.
Establishment book, and there's no doubt you can't take that away from him.
No,
but,
not at all.
Just like the LBJ piece we're getting ready to play, Sabato's done his homework.
He has done his homework. He's been working for years on this with an army of researchers, literally an army. But the unfortunate problem is, even with his army of researchers, the record is not complete. The autopsy pictures, some of them are still in the National Archives. Much of the other information is there. I suppose when you hear from Mary Moreland, she was there that day. And in the part that you will hear on Jerry's show, Sabato goes over a list of other people that were also in Dealey Plaza. So we have a lot of information, but obviously Bob Sheeper could not cover in his short panel discussion there. They had two panels basically within 20 minutes. That's the limitation of TV, and you can do a much better job of it. But still, with all the theories out there, all the research, the dictaphone belt, you talked about that in another episode, they can check that on your site, and various other things that are 50 years old. They did as the best they could in getting access to some of these things, but some other things they never did get access to. And also on your site is an interview from the museum there in Dealey Plaza with Clint Hill and some other Secret Service agents down there. So there's a mountain of material that do make a little sense, But the sense that they make, at least in my opinion, they point to more than one assassin. You have Chief Curry talking about what he felt was the situation. But Salvatore points out in his book, basically, had they done the autopsy according to Texas law, and the body was there, many more things would have came up. But actually what happened was the body was moved, and that has never happened before. The president's clothes were thrown away, and that was before they got to Bethesda. And the blood evidence in the limo, they literally brought out a bucket of water, and they washed it away. So all the splatter and anything else in that limo was washed away. And you remember in those days, I don't know what a limo is, but in those days they didn't have sophisticated tests they had today, and they could have told them much about those bullets.
That's true. That's true.
So we're kind of...
And there's no wonder when you list the litany of things that are happening there, Boston Red, that some of us like me still believe that there was a cover-up, a conspiracy, and Lee Harvey Oswald was... at best, a player on the outer limits.
He was way on the outer limits. He said he was a patsy, and a perfect patsy. They had him cast as a quote-unquote the born loser. That's what Bob Schieffer says. The unlikely candidate. Well, he was an unlikely candidate, but in my opinion, he was a very likely candidate. Because if you wanted to portray somebody, the lone nut theory, he was unstable. He was this guy that failed at everything he did. But all of a sudden, he gets luck. And he's able to fire a bolt-action rifle and kill a president. Now, that's a miracle. He would have had to have been the best marksman in the world because they did bring in the best marksman they could find, and none of them were able to replicate that. That's why your friend there from Kansas, the district attorney at one time of Philadelphia, Mr. Arlen Specter, came up with the single bullet theory, the magic bullet, I guess you'd call it, the single bullet magic bullet. And it was magic, but he didn't even believe it. He just said, well, we have to have some way of explaining what happened here. I mean, there are two men shot, and one bullet had to travel through the oven and literally come out of his body and hit the other guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. Because
and it's amazing. It's crazy that people bought into that.
Well, they bought into it. They didn't at first. And of course, you know, you're much more into it than obviously I am because – I was like Salvatore. I think Salvatore was a few years younger than me. But the point is, you were an adult at the time. And also, and I can even recall this, the majority of the people then believed that was a conspiracy. They literally did. And it hadn't went down too much. I forget what the numbers were in 62, 64. But we'll say, for the sake of the argument, it was 80% or more. Well, it's 61% now. This is 50 years later.
I believe I read some place where it was 91%.
It may have been 91%.
And 65.
Okay. It probably was that high. But now you have to remember that when polling is done, and we went over some of that, is a lot of the polling is done with people younger than us, much younger than us. So they would have had no firsthand view of it, and they literally had live TV, something unheard of in the 60s. It went 24/7 from the time the TV came on until the time it went off at night. It was constantly this stuff playing, started on the day of assassination, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then they did the funeral and all that, so there was constant information, and a lot of the information was live from Dallas, Texas, so they didn't have time to edit anything out. Or cover anything up. So, you know, all that information was out there for us to see, but it really was unfortunate. The things I did not know about, we'll wrap up this little preview, was the washing of the blood off the limits. Literally, they got a bucket of water and cleaned it all off. Now, why would they clean it off? The president would have obviously, he wasn't going to use it. Nobody was going to use it. They were going to take that car and put it back in those transport planes and send it on back to Washington. Well, that is very suspicious in itself. And even more suspicious was the secret.
And there were countless things that they did that were suspicious.
They were very suspicious.
And that's the reason I still say that there was conspiracy. I mean, this is.
Well, it had to be.
There's too many things that are coincidences, and that's just not possible.
Right, because the Secret Service agents were told, literally, according to Salvatore, and it's a movie out called Parkland that talks also about this, confronting the Texas authorities because the coroner of Dallas, Texas, said on the Texas law the body had to remain there. And Sabato has the thing that they drew the guns. Now, I'm not sure if they did or they didn't. But you could understand that in Texas with the, you know, the Dallas police, the sheriff's people, the rangers, they would have had a lot more guns if they really did not want that body to leave. There'd have been more bodies going back to Washington beside President Kennedy. No doubt about that, and the body would have stayed there. But they did let the body go. It got to Bethesda. Man conducts the autopsy. Burns the thing, said he didn't want the ghouls to get hold of it. So in other words, that record disappeared immediately. The photos, some of those are still in the National Archive today. And a few of the witnesses are still alive. We'll hear from them, and we'll be reporting back on what Mary Moreland has to say. And some others are still alive that are giving different, you know, different stories of this. So the whole thing is out. I don't know. We won't be around, obviously, 50 years from now reporting this. But there's a possibility more evidence will come up. Who knows? I give you the last minute of this.
You're right. That's it's a never-ending question mark to all of the Kennedy assassination stories. And well, the question mark is, why did they do that? Who ordered that? Why? Who? You know, et cetera.
Well, it's all out there, and I suppose the one thing, mystery or whatever you want to call it out there is, there's still 50 years later, and not pointing fingers at any people here, but there's an attempt by, we'll call the powers to be, the Monopoly Network, especially them, to close this thing up as the nut Lee Harvey Oswald did it. The nut Jack Ruby shot Lee Harvey Oswald. He was an arrogant type, hung around police types. Well, yeah, because you have to understand the police types hung around his strip joint. So it was kind of a different situation. He was a born promoter, promoting, you know, many different kinds of things. And that's just, you know, one of the situations. I knew the guy that was actually his attorney and was his psychiatrist that actually gave him the tests, etc. And Ruby was not a bright man. And again, another patsy. So we got all these patsies out here and information that is really not as complete as probably what you had back there, because a lot of the people probably that you had, people who have interviewed and showed, are now dead. And the evidence has disappeared.
True. And, you know, you're speaking of Jack Ruby. It appeared when he was in prison, it looks like he might talk. Suddenly he dies.
Well, that's true. He got a terminal cancer, and that was the end of Jack Ruby. And then also, now, one thing to note here, too, LBJ talked to Walter Cronkite about it, and he had some thoughts on it, and he himself did not think that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. But now remember, it was a few days after the interview, he had his massive heart attack. That was the LBJ.
Yeah, you got a point there, too.
So everybody that, you know, has come up with something, there's no doubt President Johnson knew something about it because he was out there and he had a big ear, more in one way. But he would have heard who was doing what, when, where. Now, if he could have proved it, who knows? But evidently, when he was talking to Cronkite, there was in his interview. I'll try to see if I can find some of that. But maybe we can throw it on your station, on your network. But the thing is, yeah, he talked about that, didn't go into details on it, and then he was dead. So all this, I guess the one thing here, and we have to quit now, is just a bunch of dead ends. People died, and I forget how many people they said that were in Dealey Plaza that day that actually ended up dying very mysteriously, like falling off of steps and breaking their necks. In other words, it was a massacre going on out there, and all these people were going. And there was another woman Sabato talks about. She was going to lunch and had to go down the same stairwell into the Texas Book Depository that Lee Harvey Oswald would have had to take it. But you can guess, no Oswald. He was not in the stairwell. and he would have had to come down that stairwell to leave. You know, there's just too many missing things here, and too many things like with the patrolman Tippett, the book on him was he was a fairly corrupt cop on the tech, and he supposedly gets killed, but was Oswald there? A lot of people think he wasn't. So in other words, it's just a bunch of blind alleys, and you go down them, and that's how we'll end it.
Well, Boston Red, it's one of those rare occasions when we agree 100%.
Yes, we do indeed, Jerry. Good night. Thank you for being here. And we'll go forward with this until at least Friday.
It's been 50 years. It seems like just yesterday to all of us that were alive during that time. And it's something that really did change the psyche of America, and especially the psyche of American politics. Thanks for listening, everyone. Boston Red's been our producer. I'm Jerry Pippin. Thanks again. Good night.